Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Suburban Bananas. And yes, this is another solo episode. I am sorry, but we are making up for the solo episodes that Sophie has done while I'm on vacation. And also, I'm going on vacation again to the East Coast to tour colleges for my sister. So I'm going to be missing another 2 weeks. I know, it's pretty sad, but the week that I'm recording this is Sophie's birthday week. So I think we might be taking a break this week or next week, and we're not going to do a collab episode until a long time later. So I'm sorry about that. But for now, today is going to be another solo episode, and it's going to be informative again, because that's how solo episodes are. And today I thought it'd be interesting to talk about voting systems. So let's just jump right into it. I'm going to explain, I'm not going to explain our current system, which is the Electoral College, because y'all have probably learned about it already in school, but basically it's the winner-take-all system, and some people find this problematic. And also, a lot of Democrats want to get rid of the Electoral College because it has historically favored Republican candidates such as Bush and Trump. So there are some proposed alternative types of voting systems that I think it's important that we should know and consider. The first one is popular vote, which is just like the basic direct democracy. It's whichever candidate gets the majority of the votes. So for example, in 2016, Hillary won popular vote. We've got plurality voting, which is whichever candidate gets the absolute majority of votes, which is more votes than all of the other candidates combined. There's also different types within these. Like, there's subcategories within these types of votings, but these are just the ones I'm sharing. There's also proportional representation, which is where legislators are elected in multi-member districts, and the number of seats won by political parties is proportional to the overall percentage of votes that these voters cast. So I know this is kind of difficult to understand, but for example, if there are 10 seats in a district and one party receives 50% of the vote, then that party gets 5 seats, because 50% of 10 is 5. And then lastly, is my personal favorite, is ranked choice voting. And this is where voters rank their candidates, so 1, 2, 3, based on their favorite. And people say this is really good because then third party candidates have a chance at winning. And in 2016, classic example, many people were forced to choose between Hillary and Trump because a third party vote would basically be considered wasted since they were so head to head. Okay, so we're gonna move on to primaries and then caucuses, which a lot of people don't really know about. And primaries are a process by which voters can indicate their preference for their party's candidate in an upcoming election. So in closed primaries, which a lot of states have, you're only allowed to vote in the primary you are registered under. So if you are a registered Democrat, you can only vote in the Democratic primary in your state. In open primaries, people say that's bad because what some people fear is that people will go to the opposite political party's primary and try to mess it up. So for example, if you are a Democrat, you can go to a Republican primary and vote for the weakest candidate so that if that candidate is nominated, that candidate will have a harder chance of winning the whole election. So yeah, that's how it works. And if, honestly, I think it's actually harder to win your primary than it is to win the election. I could be wrong, but this is just like the vibe that I get. Like last year, there were so many different candidates in the primaries, like there was Biden and everyone thought Sanders was gonna win, but he didn't. And so winning your primary is actually really competitive. And I actually enjoy watching, like for example, the Democratic primary debates than the actual, you know, presidential debate, because I feel like it's more substantive because there's more difference on policy in the actual party. So I feel like it's actually so much more interesting because the Republican and Democratic nominee, they just disagree so much ideologically that it doesn't pose as much of a substantive debate. So yeah. Anyway, so if you're a Democrat, you would race in the Democratic primaries, and then if you are the Democratic nominee, then you run against the Republican nominee, for example. And that's how the presidential election works. Okay. So a caucus is different from a primary. It's a meeting where local members of a political party vote for their preferred presidential candidate. And as you guys know, there has been some controversy around the Iowa caucus. It's not like the tech failure thing. I'm not going to talk about the tech failure thing that happened last year, just because that's not like really the controversy. The controversy is that people say that the Iowa caucus is unfair because many presidential candidates drop out after each caucus. So technically, since the caucus starts in Iowa, people in Iowa have more influence on the election. And Iowa is the first state in the caucus order because of old tradition, not because it's actually representative of the Democratic Party. More than 90% of Iowans are white, as opposed to 77% of Americans and about 61% of Democrats. It also has no major cities, despite the fact that the Democrat Party is normally urban. And researchers have found that Illinois is the best representation for the Democratic Party, but even then, others argue that caucus order should be determined by a raffle to make it more fair. And a lot of people know that Obama might not have won the presidential election if he didn't get propelled by the Iowa caucus in the beginning of his campaign. So personally, you know, I don't give a lot of my own opinions, but I do believe that the Iowa caucus is a bit unfair because although it doesn't seem like it's a super big deal, it actually does play a pretty big role in the presidential elections. Okay, so now that I gave my little speech there, I'm going to talk about increasing voter turnout. So the U.S. Census Bureau reports that in the 2020 election, there was a 66.8% voter turnout rate, which is a record high rate, because normally it's like kind of around 40 or 50%, I believe, and that's really bad. That means like half of Americans who are eligible to vote just don't vote. Sometimes it's because they can't access it very well, but sometimes it's just because they choose not to. And this is why I think it's problematic, because a lot of Americans think, oh, I'm just one person among 300 million people in the US, so my vote won't count anyway. My vote won't make an impact, blah, blah. But if a good number of people think that, then there's gonna be a bunch of people who don't vote, and that's gonna make a really big impact. So don't be that kind of person who thinks that, because you're gonna also influence other people to not vote, and that's gonna cause like a 50% voter turnout rate, which is really bad. 50% is like an F. Okay, anyway. A lot of people are also concerned in terms of like people who just are eligible to vote but they don't have access, or people are concerned about voter suppression issues like voter ID requirements and opposition against mail-in ballots. So regarding voter ID, I don't really have a super duper like good educated like researched understanding. I'm just gonna admit that right now. I don't know that much about voter ID, and it didn't seem to be like a hot topic political spotlight issue until around last year during the election. But apparently what was happening is that people say that voter ID, asking people to bring voter ID, is voter suppression because it targets certain communities of people who might not have that, and it like suppresses their right to vote, and in turn hurts the Democratic Party because these communities are more likely to vote blue. Also, a lot of people just think it's not necessary because when you register to vote, you already have all this information entered in the database and stuff, and it's just like, oh, why do you need to show your ID again? But that's just like my current understanding of the issue. I might do another episode more about it if you guys are interested. And then there's mail-in ballots. So I am actually just going to tell you my opinion. I am in favor of mail-in ballots. I think that if there weren't mail-in ballots last year, we would not have a good voter turnout at all. And I think voter turnout trumps the small risk of mail-in ballot fraud. So I think for now we should just be optimistic and we should be working on making sure we have better security for mail-in ballots and we can increase people's confidence on the security of mail-in ballots, because I think that's definitely a really good alternative for people who just can't vote in person. Okay, so another topic I wanted to touch on was about proposing a mandated civics class for seniors in high school to increase voter participation and education. And that way, students from a young age can actually research the candidates instead of straight ticket voting. So straight ticket voting or straight party voting is voting for every candidate on the ballot that aligns with your political party. And this is really, really common. Most people won't do any research on the candidates, especially for local elections, so they'll just check each box where the candidate is a Democrat or a Republican. And they'll just check all the Republicans or all the Democrats. And sometimes, even if they do research, straight ticket voting is really what the individual believes in, and that's fine. But it's also important to consider the candidate's policies thoroughly and look at the candidate through an individual, you know, lens. So, I think civics class would be really interesting, especially for seniors, because some of them are 18, some of them are 17, though. And it would just be a really good way to, you know, improve voter turnout and stuff like that. So when we talk about high schoolers voting, we also talk about lowering the voting age. And if you guys didn't know, there was a California proposition, Prop 18, last year that proposed lowering the voting age to 17 for teens turning 18 by the next election so that they can vote in primaries. And I'm pretty sure this one didn't pass. So yeah. Also, there has been some push to lower the voting age down to 16. And that will probably increase Democrat support because most Democrats are younger. But regarding the legality of this, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. But it could be legally challenging because you technically aren't a full U.S. citizen until you turn 18. So you technically, like, don't have the right to vote. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's kind of, like, my logic. I mean, I am under 18. And I'm considered a U.S. citizen, yes, but I'm not like an actual like full U.S. citizen responsible for my own self, responsible for making my own decisions until I'm an 18-year-old adult. So regarding legality, if anyone knows, just let me know, because I don't know, that seems kind of suspicious to me, lowering the voting age down to 16. So yeah, that's pretty much it for this episode. I know it was super informative and it was pretty packed, but I do think it's important to know this just with the election seasons always running around, and I feel like schools don't do a great job covering all of the government and stuff like this. So I feel like it's just nice to know and have a brief synopsis of everything. Okay, so I'll catch you guys maybe next week or in 2 weeks, and see you. Goodbye. Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to the bloopers. I know my bloopers are not as fun as Sophie's bloopers, but we will probably have a new episode together, like in 2 weeks, hopefully. So anyway, I have not been doing that much, just doing a bunch of work and homework. I am embarrassed to admit that I have not started on driver's ed yet. I know, Sophie is very ashamed of me. But today, my sister drove me all around and I was like, why do I even need to spend the time learning to drive if I can just have like her drive me? But I still think it's good to learn right now because then you won't have time for it when you're older. And anyway, okay. So the reason I'm not going to be here next week, and you might hear another solo episode from Sophie, or you might not get an episode at all, is because I'm going on a college tour for East Coast colleges, and I've only been to the East Coast one time, and that was for New York, which I consider not even on the East Coast. Like, I consider New York its own, like, country, so I haven't actually experienced the real East Coast. And so we're going to be hitting like North Carolina and all of Boston and I don't know where else, honestly. I kind of forgot. Maybe New Jersey. Oh, and DC, I forgot. But anyway, the good thing about East Coast is that the states are small, so you can actually hit a lot of different states. Whereas in the West Coast, like, Cali is huge, and driving across Cali is a task, bro. But yes, I am not super excited because I have so much work to do, and I just feel like I'm really falling behind and drowning in a puddle. But I don't know what to think. That's all. I'll let you guys know how it goes and how I like each of the colleges, just like I did with the UC schools, and when I come back. Okay, that is the end of this episode. I feel like it's a good length to stop, and I'll see you guys next week.